Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for joining us at the latest ShareSoc webinar. My name's Mike Dennis, Director of ShareSoc, and I'll be your host for this webinar. Today, we have Cathal Friel, the Exec Chairman for Open Orphan PLC. Welcome, Cathal. Cathal's talking to us from Dublin today. He's in lockdown like the rest of us. So Cathal will take you through this particular presentation and I'll join you at the end, Cathal, for the Q&A. Over to you.
Mike, it's a pleasure. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to present to your members tonight. Okay, without further ado, our disclaimer as always, I'm sure everybody reads it, but as always, buying shares is risky. I keep saying my disclaimer is the regulator says anything can go up, can come back down, and I'm always emphasizing that to all our investors. The moment we've had a lucky run, and I keep saying people don't get carried away. Any share prices doubled can also go down. So anyway, that's my folk seal version of the disclaimer. We don't want people going wild and chasing our share crazy. This slide, I think, sums up where we are. Look, myself, my colleague, a couple of colleagues put this company together. We IPO'd it in June last year. I think ShareSoc very kindly, I was one of the first presentations that I did post IPO was with yourselves. What are we? A simple message, open orphan. We're a unique European niche CRO, which is now, we're really clear of this, we're the world leader in the running of trials to test vaccines and antivirals. How do we become that? And we're an IPO only 10 months. Well, let me tell you how I got here. Open Orphan at the center, I said it was IPO'd last year. It was an opportunist vehicle. We felt, and having set up my previous company, Amrit Pharma PLC, myself and my colleague Ian O'Connell put that together 5 years ago. We hired a great management team. And even today, it's announced stunning results. It did 150 million revenues last year. Now, this is open, and this is Amrit Pharma. But we stepped aside. It's purely product. We kept our stake. We made all our shareholders a lot of money, and we set up Open Orphan. So Open Orphan is our second vehicle. And we believe in trying to get scale fast. I say Amrit is now a 450 million EV. That's a market cap of 200 plus 250 million in bonds. Open Orphan had a market cap, it was originally then, of 1 million December 2018. I think in recent days, the market cap is probably 60, 70 million. That's not bad progression. But at IPO, our market cap was sub 10 million. So that's reasonably good. And that IPO was June last year. And really what we did, we acquired one small company at the top right here. It's called Venn Life Science PLC. It was a typical AIM-listed company. Sometimes one could say, are these companies run for the shareholders or the management team? I think I probably shouldn't say the answer. But as a long-term shareholder of most companies, I believe only one thing, they should be run for shareholders and for shareholders' interests and not management interests. So look, then we turned it around. We always said we were going to take out a lot of the costs and stop it losing money. I don't think it ever made money. We then opportunistically acquired hVIVO, which was London listed. And again, a company that never really made money. It had a unique presence in that hVIVO has for a long number of years been the world leader in the testing of vaccines and antivirals using a thing called human challenge study models. But acquiring this company was interesting. It had some other assets, which are just below hVIVO, which is called Immutex. Bear in mind, hVIVO burned through £113 million sterling of really good shareholders' cash. We acquired it for 13, and some of that 113 was spent on things like building Europe's only 24-bed quarantine clinic, spending 10 million on a virology laboratory in East London, in Whitechapel. But then on the slide, they also spent a lot of money developing Immutex. hVIVO, now us, owns 48% of it. The other 52, well, actually, in fact, it's a mistake we discovered in recent days, it was actually 49% when we did the exact sum, so that should go up to 49. But it has basically, look, a universal flu vaccine that is about phase three ready. They say it's phase three ready. We say slightly about phase three ready. It also has a mosquito vaccine, which is phase three, not ready, but done at this stage. And it has this other, some other products, we call, you find these things in the basement when you acquire companies, a repurposed influenza immune modulator. Basically, that's something, it's almost like an antiviral. Over on the right-hand side, we have the genomic health data. And as this slide gets updated in the current week, you'll see it's now been populated very heavily. hVIVO has probably the world, definitely Europe's largest database of infectious disease. Never monetized it. That will be going to, and a lot of it is proteomic and some of it genomic. That will be populating our health data platform literally in the coming days and weeks. So that's kind of summary for a little company pulling two together. I think we've ended up with a rather good place, and quite exciting place that we actually have a real business now. The combined business last year made about 26, 27 million. The results for those will be published as we approach into June, and that's for last year. It still had massive losses last year. We've made clear to the market in the Q2, going into Q3, i.e. the second half of the year. We will make this company profitable if it's the last thing we do. That's our plan. So we're generating, taking damaged companies, put them together, generate profits, and now, as you'll see, and even some news today, is trying to put some new product lines in place. I'll not dwell on this, other than probably bottom right-hand side, is important to talk about shareholders and why has our share price performed. At the end of March, we still had 4 million cash in the bank. We had a market cap of 35. I think since the end of March, our market cap has almost doubled. And the reason lies in the bottom right-hand corner. Why has our share price gone up? It's basically the overhang from two large legacy shareholders. When we acquired hVIVO, it was 80% owned by Invesco, who are still here. You'll see in the bottom right-hand corner at 9.56. The former Woodford Holdings, 7.3. And also two other large stakes. One was held by Jupiter, and the second, even larger stake, was held by IP Group. Every time we issued good news flow in the last 3 months, bear in mind we only took over this company at the end of January. So we had February, March, and April. We have 3 months. Good news flow, either Invesco or IP Group dumped shares. So put a cap on our share price at the merger price of about 6p. They sold the last shares, IP, literally 5 weeks ago. And that overhang gone, our share prices performed really, really well. So largest shareholders, myself, co-founders, we'd invested a lot of our personal cash. We're locked up for 3 years from last June. That's another 2.5 years. And we don't believe, first of all, there's going to be any more overhangs. We gathered the Woodford stake is now in pretty, it's not going anywhere. We can't say more than that. Other than that, is that stake has not been sold as we speak for a host of reasons. And then Invesco stake, they actually agreed with us. They thought we were doing putting these companies together, and they're not selling. So it's very clear from the share price performance in the last 5 weeks, Invesco are not selling. They're in, we gather, they've given us a three-line whip, do something strategic by Christmas or find us a buyer. So they're going to allow us to really build a proper company between now and Christmas. And we've always said one of the options to monetize everybody's investment would be to sell the company. And as we go forward, these options and others are beginning to appear. Not going to dwell too much on the management team, other than look, in recent weeks, i.e. Monday of last week, most importantly, people say, oh, Kyle, you lost your chief executive, Trevor Phillips. What happened there? Look, Trevor's been wonderful. He was with hVIVO. He led the merger on his side. But we cryptically, on the 20th of January, we announced the combined deal. We kind of guided the market somewhat that, look, we're going to have to take a lot of costs out. And I said I was staying on board as a very, I don't want to use the word, hands-on executive chairman with Trevor being the CEO. It was kind of almost preordained that as part of the cost cutting, there's no room for a hands-on executive chairman who's put half his life savings into the company and also CEO. Plus, under the AIM rules, it's very clear you have a CEO and a non-exec chairman, or an exec chairman and no CEO. So I think we've gone with the latter. Within all these companies, when you take them over, and there's the benefit of being a seller of companies for 15 years in my previous life as a corporate finance, there's fantastic line managers. And we're finding across Venn, and particularly hVIVO, there's some brilliant line managers stepping up. And as we kind of take out a lot of the top layer management, the number twos have been sitting there are really shining. Very importantly, when you're fixing companies, is the CFO. Leo has worked with us in the background for 18 months in Open Orphan, and he is really driving the cost base. Tim Sharpington, our COO, he's been with HVIVO for the past 2 years, and Tim is doing a great job of being the Chief Operating Officer. And then we have the three-person board. And since this slide, we also have Professor John Oxford heading up a scientific advisory board, which is useful to have given the space we're in. Complementary services, very quickly, what have we? We've put HVIVO together with Open or Orphan, then HVIVO tests vaccines and antivirals, then is a drug development consultancy. The real important part is look at the bottom right-hand side. Look at the customers, especially in the current market. Look, very bottom right-hand side, DARPA, that's the American Defense Organization. They've used HVIVO regularly. We have Gilead, a popular name these days. There is Merck in there. You have Boehringer Ingelheimer. You've got basically a lot, Janssen, and Johnson, you've got a lot of the biggest vaccine manufacturers and pharma companies in the world who've been dealing particularly with HVIVO and also then. So going forward, those names in the current environment are particularly important. There's a lot of cross-selling now. HVIVO does challenge studies. And part of that offering, we use 10% of every challenge study. There's a data management, there's a biostats and medical writing, and that all comes from Venn Life Science side. I'm not going to dwell too much, I'm conscious, on challenge studies. For anybody who wants to know about challenge studies, I would suggest you go to page 7 of the deck and read it. But basically, what's involved? Challenge studies is how does a small East London company become the world leader in the testing of vaccines? Basically, what we do, we basically test the vaccine and the virus on human challenge volunteers. And what that involves is 1 month before we start a trial, We have a way of collecting a lot of volunteers. We pay them £3,500 per volunteer, and we inoculate them with the vaccine to be tested. 50 will get the vaccine, 50 will get a placebo. Nobody, only us, will know which 50 it is. And then 4 weeks later, when that vaccine works and is in your body, we bring them into our quarantine clinic. So that's the there. That's the first day in the clinic at the bottom of the graph. 2 days later, and they're secured in this facility where there's no outside, they're totally monitoring quarantine, but under full doctor medical. 2 days later, we make them sick. We actually give them a version of whatever the virus we're trying to make the vaccine work. They get mildly sick, i.e. they're in their bed. They have nothing more than a bad, maybe a nasty sniffy nose, runny nose, cold, flu, whatever it is. And we watch the progression of the disease over 10 days. And at the end of the 10 days, we make sure they're all perfectly well and healthy before we send them home. And we check them every couple of hours that there's no disease, they're no threat to themselves or their family, and they go home. But we know exactly then, literally, the beauty of this, after 10 days, did the placebo work or did the vaccine work better, which worked? So it's a really simple way. Funny enough, this is one of the few places in the world you can do this with vaccines. But there we go, that's a challenge study. What makes this exciting? Early March, and this we've got things going, we announced we're going to be the first people in the world to test a coronavirus challenge study model. And in recent weeks, we've now modified that more so that we're probably going to be working on a COVID-19 attenuated virus. So we're really lucky that we happen to have a solution. Challenge studies speed up the development of vaccines. The whole world is looking for ways of bringing the COVID-19 vaccine closer to the market. I think the WHO announced last week that, yes, a COVID-19 challenge study has to be one of the tools to bring the vaccine to the market all around the world a year or two quicker than under normal plans. So, look, be honest, we just got really lucky acquiring this company. Any of our shareholders in there, we can certainly be one of the companies in the world that can make a big impact on the development of vaccines. We don't develop the vaccines, we just test them, but we can speed up the testing. I'm not going to dwell on too much. I said this before so often. Our friends, the previous shareholders, would have put 110. 113 was the exact amount of money. They built this amazing laboratory and clinic in East London in Whitechapel, an on-site viral laboratory. We said that's 25 million to build a clinic, 10 million to build a laboratory. And let me dwell a little bit in this laboratory at the moment. Everybody has seen a nice announcement made this morning. Our friends Cogen from New York would never have signed up and made us exclusive UK and Irish distributor and testing agent for one of two kits in the world that give 100%. Obviously, Roche is the other one. And it was the only reason they signed up with us because of this facility we have here. We've got all the molecular high throughput technology they need. So people hopefully have seen today, we made that announcement that we will be in the next couple of weeks testing in the UK at 100% accuracy for COVID-19 antibodies. And they say, we want to be careful. We don't want to talk too much for another week or two to make sure we're up and running. And in about 2 weeks' time, when those tests are running and we're getting 100% accuracy, rest assured, we'll talk a lot more to the press about it and to our shareholders. What have we? We're primarily a services company, but along the way, we within Immutex, we've got some assets. We believe these assets should be not monetized within the services company, particularly Immutex on the left-hand side, and particularly the bottom, the repurposed immune modulator. Particularly the Immutex, which is a universal flu vaccine, is a really exciting product to have in the current market. 6-9 months ago, a bit like hVIVO, nobody wanted to know about hVIVO being the world's most successful and best tester of vaccines. Likewise, 6 months ago, nobody really wanted to know about a universal flu vaccine. As we all know, all of that has changed and there's lots of interest. I've said in recent weeks, one way of monetizing Immutex, we believe we own 49% of it. Our colleagues in the C Group own 51. We're going to look at potentially doing a dividend species to all our shareholders and put them into a NASDAQ listed small vehicle and develop them there. So all open orphan shareholders, if we can pull that up, will have one share in open orphan, but they'll have one share in the Immutex business as well, which will be listed. So you get shares in two public companies, because we don't believe you should mix a product discovery company, which is high risk, high reward, with us, Open Orphan, which is going to be a highly profitable, steady growing services company. So again, more of that when we have something to announce on it. The genomic health database, this has to be refreshed substantially because now we're populating it very much from the hVIVO database. So we'll be talking a lot more about genomic and we're downplaying, even though I haven't talked much about orphan drugs, and we're focusing a lot more. We're still interest in the orphan. We're still very much doing the genomic health database for orphan, but we're adding to it. There's going to be a genomic infectious disease. So this database, as from 3 or 4 weeks' time, will have a lot of data in it, ready for monetizing and on a subscription basis to large pharma, and will be populated with an awful lot of data that HP will have over 25 years, and it's a progression of infectious diseases. We're being opportunists. There is a huge market at the moment for that data, and we'd be mad not to capitalize upon it. I'm not going to dwell too much in this because I really want to get to the meat, but look, putting these two companies together, the average ticket size got bigger, the average length of relation got bigger. It just made sense to put hVIVO and Open Orphan's Venn business together. That's a whistle stop story about Open Orphan, basically the Venn business. It's an early stage pharma consulting CRO. And again, look at the wonderful customers they had. hVIVO likewise. This combined pipeline and all of these slide decks has been on our website, and we'd hope in the coming week or two to really refresh the deck on our website to give you much better insight what we're doing. A lot of people kerfuffled on this 80 million pipeline of potential hVIVO prospects, and all you can see is have a look at the first contract we announced 5 weeks ago is an RSV pilot. Instead of being 2.4, it ended up being a 3.2. It had a follow-on 7 million study for later this year. So client A is done and started. Instead of being a 2.4, it's a 3.3. And that second study is the one we've also announced. So they're two done. The next one, client C, RSV attenuated vaccine, that is in the hopper. And we got another one done last week, which was 3.5. So this reasonably robust pipeline is coming together. I think you have to be a really good closer and push really hard. Some of these contracts, I know we thought we might have got one every month. Some months we might have two. With lockdown and people work from home, it takes a little longer to get some of it. We're very, very happy that pipeline is converting. And I think part of being hands-on executive chairman, you have to really force the staff to close out these contracts, and that's what we're doing. Immediate operational long-term revenue synergies. Look, again, we're putting the two of them together. The two of them fit together like a glove. But the biggest thing is we're making it clear. We're taking substantial headcount out. at we took over Venn last year, just to give you an idea on figures, it had 179 staff and did about 12, 13 million in revenue. By the end of May, Venn will have less than 80 staff. That's over 110, over 100 staff that go. At minimal cost, you know, it wasn't a huge cost to get rid of them. And guess what? I think this year we'll do roughly the same revenue. So it'll give you an idea the excess fat that was in there. Likewise, HVivo, say we've to date, we've taken 2 million in the last 2.5 months out of his overhead. And we want to take another 4 million out by Christmas. And that was like people said, losing the CEO wasn't a good idea. But I say you can't. Look, what we're really doing is reducing a lot of the very senior and bringing up some of the more middle management who's been there for years. Like somebody at HVivo who's really shone out is the chief scientist, who's there for 14 years, Andrew Catchpole. He is also hugely active in business development. And before we got involved, I don't think anybody ever heard of Andrew. And Andrew has been on BBC TV. He's been interviewed in the Wall Street Journal. He's very hands-on. Go-getter. Along with him, there is other brilliant staff within it, Andrew, Adam French, and lots of others. So within HVivo, we have fabulous second-line managers who are coming to the fore and who have the long history of the company. So yeah, putting them together, taking out the cost base, not that hard, generate the revenues, we're doing that. And very importantly, is generate new revenue streams. So we're aiming for substantial revenue growth and, more importantly, profitability. A big part of substantial revenue growth, I think, will come from not alone challenge studies. It'll be new COVID-19 challenge studies. It'll be expanding the lab testing. HVivo in the past never did third-party lab testing. We announced a deal to the market 2-3 weeks ago. Okay, it was a Moscow-based firm. People were worried. But within the medical side, there's no issue with sanctions. It's the next HVO person's in. But that was just a flag to the market. There's a lot more lab testing work coming down the track. And then separately from third-party lab testing work to other pharma companies, today's announcement, we're really keen not to say too much about it just yet till we have it up and running. We're installing the kit. But we will be, as per RNS this morning, offering 100% accuracy COVID-19 antibody tests through channel partners in the coming weeks, not the coming months, because of the fact we have that £10 million virology laboratory, we can get up and running with the Cogent test really well. There's only two now. It involves a full blood draw. It's not the little pinprick, do your DIY at home and guess. These are done through medical professions, and we'll see that on the side of the Cogent's, but it means we can guarantee 100% accuracy. In the current environment, that's so valuable. In summary, I think we said we're going to put these two companies together. We said we're going to make them profitable. We said we're going to increase revenues. And more importantly, we also said we'd increase the lines. And I think the lines are now a lot more lab testing work from HVivo and a lot new lines such as the antibody testing. I think that kind of brings us, Mike, back over to you to Q&A, hopefully.
Right, we're open for questions now. I've got quite a few coming in already, so I'll do my best to get through these as quickly as we can. I think we might be pushed for time here, so brevity could be key. One question, why the additional broker?
Yeah, good question. Look, Arden were very loyal. Arden took us, and being honest with you, we were a bit of a charity case. I came on board as chairman of Venn December 2018, a year and a half ago. Its share price had collapsed from 20p to 1p. Market cap was 1 when I got on board. I put £1 million of my own and mates' money in as a loan note, a very low-cost loan note with virtually no convertibility. And in March, we decided we want to restart this company. I mean, Frank, most brokers told us to get lost. Then we'll be out of business before Easter. So Arden were one of the few people who had the foresight and said, yeah, this is worth working with. So we took Arden on board as their new Nomad in March because, being honest with you, the old Nomad had kind of said to Ben, out of here, guys. So the incumbent Nomad wanted rid of Venn. They just couldn't stand them. So they took us on board. But Arden's only problem is they don't have much scale or capability in life science. They're great guys. They helped us do IPO. We love the corporate finance team. But we're at a stage now where I think going by that slide, number three, we have a real life science business, and we would like to work with every company I've had, because I'm a farmer, but we've always had two brokers. So FinCap do have very good life science capabilities. And then just reflections, Amrit, the day I IPO'd it 4.5 years ago, we had Shore and we had Stifel. When I did Fastnet prior to that, we've always had two. So I just think it's wise to have two brokers.
When do you anticipate the COVID challenge study will be ready for trials? And I think you've kind of answered that one, but what will be the cost of this? And is this being met by a third party or rather than a market raise?
Good question. Look, we already have done a lot of work on what's called the seasonal coronavirus challenge study. We announced that on the 7th of March, and that's where the whole world got excited what we were doing. The seasonal coronavirus, you and me, Mike, we have a 25% chance one of us had it. Anytime we've got a cold, a cough, not a nasty flu, that is probably OC43. One-fifth of the population have antibodies for it. It's quite well known, and OC43 or 229E. We started that. However, and the however comes in recent weeks, we've had every vaccine manufacturer in the world talking to us saying, listen, we really like your idea of the seasonal one, but we think this more deadly COVID-19 needs the real deal. So we're now very rapidly pulling together a COVID-19. It'll probably be an attenuated virus, which means we take the nasties out of it. And that is underway. So to answer question one, it will be ready, hopefully. We're not there yet. It's a lot of work by autumn time. That means by autumn time, we can prove does any of these vaccines work or not within 2 months or 3 months maximum. So that's pretty useful. It will take some financing. Originally, we were going to get the financing for our seasonal from some Chinese pharma companies. In recent weeks, we've decided to pile ahead and do as much of it off our own cash resources, because if we self-fund it and we can do it, there is 100 COVID-19 vaccines under development. There's really 20 serious ones. And of the 20 serious ones, everyone is in contact with us. And there's a chance of getting 8, 10, 12 of those as COVID-19 challenge studies. So to be honest with you, we're no longer looking for a third party to fund those models, in particular the COVID-19. Anyone of the vaccine manufacturers say, look, we'll fund that for you. And we're saying, yes, if you fund it for us, we'll be stuck dealing with you. We would like to be able to offer our COVID-19 human challenge study model to every vaccine manufacturer in the world. The clinic is very important. It's got 24 beds in rooms individually. It's built in 3 zones of 8. We can run 3 vaccine companies together, 8 per room, or sorry, zones of 8. So we can run 3 challenge studies. We could have 3 big pharma companies in our clinic working side by side. So that therein lies the opportunity. And more importantly, this is an awful disease, an awful affliction. It's shut the whole world down. And we believe we should make that challenge study. Not alone will it be, let's be honest, we're a business. There is money to be made in it, but we want to make it available to everybody around the world at the same time, rather than picking one pharma company.
Thank you. What revenue capacity does the lab service business have over the next 12-month period?
Well, let me actually probably better go back. I should have finished, but the clinic has a 48 million capacity. You can never run the clinic to 24 beds beyond 80%. There's always a changeover. You've got to sterilize the clinic. So we run it at 80% maximum. In the past, it's never done more than 14 or 15 million as last year. That was at 25%. So we can run that up to 48 million. Otherwise, we can do 3 times the current capacity before we hit capacity issues. Now, that's on the clinic, the challenge studies. The lab has never done third-party work. It is basically servicing the clinic. We've got almost a huge upside in capacity there. The kit we announced this morning is going in tomorrow. We're not messing around. We're doing the first blood draws late this week, and we're doing the first runs on Monday of next week. That kit can do, without any extra work, very substantial testing capability. I'm not at liberty to say exactly what it is, but put it this way, we can do an awful lot of revenue through that lab without any capex.
One question here about your recent headcount reduction, the apparent paradox of reducing staffing by more than half and yet expecting a big increase in contracts over the next year or two. Is that going to make sense in hindsight?
Yeah, look, the van side is where we took the real, we took 100 staff. But the irony of irony was that if you do the sums, Van was massively overstaffed. It had an office in Dublin, had an office in Paris, an office outside Amsterdam, an office in Northern Holland, an office in Belfast, and an office in Germany, and it was doing 12 million. Like, your average Spar shop might do more than that. So lose a lot of offices, lose a lot of staff. The headcount reduction with, look, let's be honest, the golden goose here is HVivo in London, and we're not taking many staff. We said we take 2 million out of our head to date. A lot of that was, let's say, surplus fat. As we crank up HVivo, the beauty about it is a fixed cost base, it's clinics like running a hotel. We're only doing 25% occupancy, both in the lab and the clinic. So the same staff, you know, do almost triple the work, triple the revenue with minimal extra work. Whereas the consultancy side, and then, yes, if we want to double that revenue going forward, we'd have to increase the staff. But our focus is on HVivo in London, the world leader in testing vaccines and antivirals.
You mentioned earlier, I think, that you were hoping to at least break even later this year. Does that mean that there are no more fundraisers needed in the near term?
That's a good question. Look, one should never say never. All that I'd say in that regards is that, look, COVID-19 is presenting companies like us with unprecedented opportunities. Our testing capability, we can go steady eddy forward, or we can maybe scale it up. For instance, the kit going in, hypothetically, well, I better not go into numbers, I'm straying off and very much, but look, what we'd say is that if opportunities are presenting to us, we'd never say no. But what I would say, maybe I'll talk a little bit in the share price, we IPO'd at 5.7p, I think we presented to your audience in August, it was about around the same 5.8. Our share price has run up to 13. I always advocate anybody who doubles their money, especially in the current environment, this is not a 5 or 10x company. We're a services company. Our share price has almost tripled in this last year, and we would caution people, don't be getting carried away. Take some profits, come back in, come back out. We have a very liquid stock. With the overhang gone, our share price, being honest, went nowhere for 9 months while we had two institutions selling stock. We now have that overhang gone. It's not hard for the share price to move ahead, but I'm genuinely issuing caution at the moment. Look, we have products, but we're very much focused on services. And we're sort of saying we have a nice share price, we're very comfortable with it, but we don't want people going wild saying this is a 3x, 4x more. We're not, we are a services company. There's a limit to what multiple our company is worth. Our company is worth a multiple of products. A multiple of profit as all services, and a certain low X number of revenue. We did nearly 30 million last year. We can substantially increase that this year, but we're still only worth 2-3 times our revenue. So if that makes sense, we may or may not raise money. There's a huge appetite in the market for backing opportunities. But at the same time, I do caution any share prices tripled. Let's be careful.
How many tests can you do, and how much will you charge, and what kind of revenue is that going to generate? I'm not sure. I assume that means lab tests. Not sure.
Yeah, I think, look, that one, Mike, is people are asking how many COVIDs. Like, we can't say yet, but we can say it's a lot. It's in the thousands per day. Price-wise, we can't go there yet because we do not want to be price gouging. We've got to provide this service at a reasonable price. So I'd say let's cross that bridge in the coming days and weeks.
And what timeline are you expecting for a Flu V spin-off? Have you any idea?
Absolutely. In the next month or two or three maximum. Look, we spent the first 3-4 months integrating the two business, making sure the overheads were reduced, getting it profitable at the end of Q2, going into Q3. And now is the stage, let's look at this other assets, particularly the product assets. So we've set ourselves next 2-3 months. But again, we don't want people going wild. We will tell them when it's coming out. They don't have to go wild. They will get a share for share. It'll be done as a dividend species. And then they can make the decision what happens at other assets. So that cuts, rather than having a share within a share, or like a mini conglomerate, where we are, let's spin it off, and every shareholder will have a share in that asset, and let the public market value Immutex. We can't value them in it. Being frank, we don't know what it's worth, but let's put it in the public vehicle and let the public markets value it that way.
Okay, thank you. The just going back to tests, one here about isn't there a bit of a credibility problem with antibody tests and even with a full blood test rather than a pinprick? How can you address this issue with the market and the government at the moment?
I'm delighted somebody asked that. Again, if you read our RNS this morning, and I'm not so much has happened, I'm not even going to try and go through it. But look, two things. Pinpricks don't work, okay, for something the sense of this. I think we've all heard about Theranos. It's the most amazing book to read, Bad Blood. This is the people in California who claimed they could check anything with a pink pinprick. A pinprick is absolutely perfect for cholesterol, for very, very low sensitivity things. But for something as serious as COVID-19, and particularly antibodies, you need a full, it's called a full blood draw. This cannot be done at home. This has to be done through your GP practice, through your walk-in clinics. We need, for this to work, we need a certain amount of real blood. And at the moment, the RNS said this morning, not us, it was our partner said they have 100% accuracy under the CE mark. And there's only two companies in the world that have said that. That's Roche and our partners, Cochin. When we say our partners, is we have the exclusive rights to distribute their testing in the UK. So we say partners, people are worrying, oh, is it a joint venture? No, they provide the tests. We have the laboratory to do them, and we provide that to the UK.
Who do you regard as your main competitor?
I wonder what regards human challenge studies. We don't have one. The only reason, a wonderful little East London company is the world leader in testing vaccines. We don't really have one. We have one competitor in Belgium called SGS that is part of a monster called SGS, which is 20 billion market cap. Former HVIVO employee went there, and they do some human challenge studies. We do know, we said in RNS last week, they cannot do RSV. It's very, very difficult. And that's the world's most popular human challenge study at the moment. And they certainly won't be doing COVID-19. Could you see a $20 billion market cap company taking a risk? Like, we're going to do a risk on trying to be the first person with a COVID-19 human challenge study. We're going to roll a dice on it, and it's going to make us famous. We're not going to blow the company up. I just think a company with 20 billion is not going to be as fast, as nimble, or as risk averse as we are. So in the human challenge studies, that's a competitor. As it comes to the lab services, yes, there's a lot, but there's not a lot of labs specialized in virology. And then when it comes to the antibody testing, yeah, every one of those HomeKit Amazons are a competitor. But I think if I wanted to know, have I got antibodies or not? And am I safe? Am I a frontline doctor who now can say I have antibodies and I don't have to worry about PPE? Like, the beauty about what we're doing, and this is Roche is going, we want to provide a test that frontline doctors can know, do I have antibodies 100% certain, yes or no? If I have antibodies, I don't need to wear PPE. I'm safe. I can go home. I don't worry. If I haven't antibodies, I need to cover up and be very careful. That's an important test to be able to provide. So our competitors there is Roche, and we don't believe anybody else. We know there's lots of other small companies. If you're not taking a full blood draw, we don't believe it's going to be, it can give that efficacy. And I would suggest anybody who thinks you can get the details from a pinprick, you know, and a pinprick is a small sample of blood that size versus the blood vials you draw, should look at, I don't know, go there, but look, basically, there's a lot of history, what you can find from a pinprick of blood or from a full blood draw.
Do you have any plans for a NASDAQ listing?
No, definitely not. AIM has done very well as pharma services. However, the Immutex asset, we believe, should not be on AIM, should be not part of us. That should be NASDAQ. NASDAQ loves, let's be honest, I call it the sex and violence, a high risk, high reward. And product companies such as influenza, such as Universe. So yeah, we would like to vend that into a small NASDAQ company at a modest valuation, and everybody gets a share in that, and we roll the dice and see can we apply our medicine to it and drive it upwards. So that would be the only thing we'd be looking NASDAQ wise would be the Immutex asset. That's not done yet. So we genuinely don't want people, look, I keep emphasizing as a private investor myself, as a promoter, we're guiding people, just please don't get carried away. We're really happy. Our share price has almost tripled since last year. It has doubled in 5 weeks since we've got rid of this overhang. But look, we are a services company, and it shouldn't be doubling and tripling going forward just yet. We look, let it go up when we get more news flow. We've done a lot. We've a lot more to do, but we're more comfortable. Let's get more news flow before we see it going too much higher.
I'm assuming with the spin-off that the company is the shareholders, the existing Open Orphan shareholders, are going to get something like a one-for-one deal of shares in the new co. Is that the kind of thing you had in mind?
Absolutely, it'll be done via dividend species, which means that if you and I own shares in Open Orphan, for every one Open Orphan share, we get a matching share in the other vehicle. Yeah. But we share cert into our hands are not held in some complicated trust. So it means our shareholders then can make the decision as to what to do. So the plan would be you and I and anybody else who shares, we'd end up holding two share certs, one in Open Orphan and one in the Immutex vehicle. And we might put other products in that repurpose immune modulator as a product. It really shouldn't be sitting in our company. It should be sitting in a product company.
Somebody here wants to know, what do you think the spin-off will be worth?
A terrible thing to say, but genuinely, investors should always think of the following. It is sarcasm, but it's true. When I used to sell companies as a corporate finance person, that was my real day job. It was the only job I did really well. We would always act for the seller, and the buyer would say, how much do you want for this company? And I'd say, you tell us. And he said, well, how much is it worth? I said, how long is a piece of string? So I think we don't know. Look, I think the spin-off, let's put it in a public vehicle, and shareholders in the public vehicle can value it accordingly.
What about the deal with Quotient here? Since Quotient is a lab testing system, what exactly will Open Orphan do? Will Open Orphan be paid? Will it have a stake in the IP created?
Yeah, wonderful question. Look, on the Quotient deal, we're probably keen to talk more about it in the coming weeks when everything's set up. But we have the lab, we've got the kit. Their machine has come in and they provide the tests, and we take the blood in and we give the finished product out to anybody in the UK who wants an antibody test. So we do everything. Quotient provides their machinery and their kit. We buy it and then we sell on the results. So it's basically very much in vivo, and we want to roll that out and really scale that up in the coming weeks and months. But this is not a case of, yeah, and they make their money in supplying the equipment, but more importantly, the kits. They supply the cassettes to us.
Is it not strange that legacy shareholders were still attempting to divest and have not attempted to return, given the impact of COVID? Have they attempted to re-engage at all? Maybe change their minds?
No, I think, look, you've said the last time I presented was your...
March the 11th in London, yeah.
Anyway, the one where we had the three fund managers from Jupiter present, which night was that?
Yeah, that was March, mid-March, just before the lockdown came, yeah.
Look, what happened within HBVO, and Jupiter, being ironic, I was smiling, they were our biggest seller at that time when they'd gone. Look, Jupiter makes decisions, big fund managers come in. They came into HBVO because of discovery. They would have followed probably as a Woodford baby. There was a group who sort of hunted in packs, and they came in. When HVivo didn't succeed and lost its way, they decided to sell. So fund managers are very binary. They wanted out. They made it clear to us in January. They said, Carl, hurry up. The piece that I thought they might have sat for a while, they made the binary decision to leave, as did IP Group, and they're gone. We don't think fund managers, unlike private investors, when they decide to leave, they don't generally come back in unless it's fundamentally different. We're very fortunate the two remaining legacy shareholders, as far as we can see and are aware, are not sellers. And hence, our share price has performed accordingly. So I don't think people should expect any fund manager who sells out of a situation. Yes, look, maybe in the coming weeks and months, that may change. COVID is seen now as a buying opportunity for a lot of companies. But let's see.
Okay, thanks. I've got a couple more actually have just come in. There was one on the succession planning challenge. Obviously, you've let go quite a few people in the upper echelons of the business at the moment. And if you were to come to some unfortunate grief under the proverbial London bus or something, what have you got a plan?
Yeah, and look, I think the fact that I'm sitting here in Dublin in lockdown and the company is flying, I keep emphasizing, and this having spent 15 years selling companies, almost the most available people in the company are the number twos, number threes, the line managers. And within both HVO and Venn, we've some unbelievable, and I don't underestimate, really valuable. So I could be on the proverbial bus today and the company might even do better without me. My main input, being honest with you, was just being the catalyst for change, being the person who, right, I've got a sharp knife, I'm going to take out the costs. The next piece that's happening is the line managers. Look, being perfectly honest with you, this coaching deal had nothing, and I emphasize, nothing to do with me. I'm getting the praise for it. It's transformational for us. That was basically people within the company being freed up. The RSV challenge. So the plan is, look, if I'm still here in January, we should be looking at a transition. And I believe in internal hires. I think all of us worked in enough companies to have people externally coming in. My formula is come in, clean these companies up, and it's from the experience of selling companies and stuff what people do before, free up the really good, highly motivated, but people who are buried, and let them run the company going forward. We're not in this for a long term. I've never made it clear this is a lifetime. Some people get involved in companies and they're there for the salary. I mean, the company for the capital appreciation. And does that involve us selling the company next year? Maybe. Does that involve the company getting very big? Look at Amrit. Amrit is one of my other better investments, and I don't lose a moment about it. Like, it did great work. There is a great management team. So it might come early next year if things is doubling and tripling. This idea of selling the company isn't the only solution, if that makes sense.
Okay, that leads on to your exit plans. If you, is there anything you can share with us about your preferred exit and timing on that, if at all possible?
As the largest shareholder, I can sell. And I'm locked in for 2.5 more years. My only exit is selling the company. So I think you know what I prefer.
One final one here. If you do have any future fundraisers, and I know nothing apparently in the plan at the moment, just a plea from one of our members here, and it's a kind of a, I know this is a bit of a hot topic at the moment, is with a lot of fundraisers going on, our members and private shareholders in general have often been bypassed by the company's brokers, and we haven't had a look in. Just a question, will you give your private shareholders, the individual shareholders, an opportunity with any future fundraisers? Is that the way you like to approach these?
Mike, absolutely. Look, I think two things. We've all been shareholders. Look, in January, we did a fundraise. We were in a lucky position. We could outline it. And I think I got slapped in the wrist by no man's by telling people what price it would be at. But we guided the market. It would be about 6.1 or 6.2. So our investors, and we're able to say, oh, okay, if we buy them around 6.1 or 6.2, we're in with the institutions. I think going forward, that's only possible if you're doing an acquisition and everything is very public. Absolutely. I think one of the, as you probably know, the problem with a small cap company to open it to the public, it becomes much more slower. It's a 3 or 4 months process. It's a full prospectus document. However, primary bid provides a great facility and things like that. So absolutely, if something like that's happening in the future, I think absolutely, I don't want shareholders buying shares today and waking up tomorrow, oh, there was a 10 or 20% discounted fundraise, why not me? So I think absolutely, look, we have a very good retail following. I want to have many more of these vehicles in the years ahead. And the only way to do that is look after our retail following. So yes, there will be a slice, and we just got to figure it's very likely through a primary bid if we're ever doing one. Or who knows, if we do another deal like HVivo, it's worked out rather well. We can guide the market very carefully because we've got to seek permission to acquire a company. And at the same time, you say, listen, folks, if the company goes through, we'll probably raise money. And I'll be naughty, I'll do it again at roughly that price. That guides people. where they should go. Does that make sense?
Eminent sense, Cathal, and glad to hear that you know, you'd be keen to make sure that individual investors do get a slice of the action. So that's excellent. Well, that covers all the questions, Cathal. So thank you very much for excellent presentation and update on where you've got to since we heard from you in March. I can imagine there's a lot happening in your world at the moment. So be good to catch up maybe towards the end of this year whenever you've got more news on developments and so on. And in the meantime, I'll wish you all the best with the work that you and the team are doing. All the best in the lockdown, and look forward to perhaps meeting you again face to face one day if we all can.
Absolutely. No, it's a pleasure, Mike. Look forward to talking further. And hopefully, we were just keen to say we just keep delivering the deals and keep guiding. Say, let us deliver more deals before the share price goes too much further wild. As deals come out, buy the shares, as we say, but wait for deals.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.